Chapter 49 Cold Rock's Hold. Frowning, Rand looked around. A mile ahead stood a tight cluster of tall, sheer-sided buttes, or perhaps one huge butte broken by fissures. To his left, the land ran off in patches of tough grass and leafless, spiny plants, scattered thorny bushes and low trees, across acrid hills and jagged gullies, past huge rough stone columns to jagged mountains in the distance. To the right, the land was the same, except the cracked yellowish clay lay flatter, the mountains closer. It could have been any piece of the waste he had seen since leaving Cheyendare. "Where?" he said. Ruark glanced at Avienda, who was looking at Rand as though he had lost his wits.
"Come, let your own eyes show you Cold Rocks."
Dropping his shufa to his shoulders, the clan chief turned and loped bareheaded toward the fissured rock wall ahead. The Shido had already halted, milling about and beginning to set up their tents. Hiron and the Jindo fell in behind Ruark at a trot with their pack mules, uncovering their heads and shouting wordlessly, and the maidens escorting the peddlers cried for the drivers to hasten their teams and follow the Jindo. One of the wise ones lifted her skirts to her knees and ran to join Ruark. Rand thought it was Amis, from the pale hair. Surely Bear could not move that nimbly. But the rest of the wise one's party maintained its original pace. For a moment, Moraine looked as if she would break away toward Rand, then hesitated, arguing with one of the other wise ones, hair still hidden by her shawl. Finally, the Aes Sedai reined her white mare back beside Egwene's gray and Lan's black stallion, just ahead of the white-robed Guy Shine, who were tugging the pack animals along. They were heading the same way as Ruark and the others, though. Rand leaned down to offer a hand to Avienda. When she shook her head, he said, "If they are going to be making all that noise, I won't be able to hear you down there. What if I make a wool-headed mistake because I can't hear what you say?" Muttering under her breath, she glanced at the maidens around the peddler's wagons, then sighed and clasped his arm. He hoisted her up, ignoring her indignant squawk, and swung her onto Giatin behind the saddle. Whenever she tried to mount by herself, she came close to pulling him out of the saddle. He gave her a moment to settle her heavy skirts, though at best they bared her legs well above her soft, knee-high boots, then heeled the dapple to a canter. It was the first time Avienda had ridden faster than a walk. She flung her arms around his waist and hung on. "If you make me look the fool before my sisters, Wetlander," she snarled warningly against his back. "Why would they think you a fool? I've seen Bear and Amis and the others ride behind Moraine or Egwene sometimes to talk." After a moment, she said, "You accept changes more easily than I, Randall Thor." He was not sure what to make of that. When he brought Giadin up with Ruark and Hiron and Amis, a little ahead of the still-shouting Jindo, he was surprised to see Cooladin running easily alongside, flame-colored hair, Bear. Avienda tugged Rand's own shufa down to his shoulders. "You must enter a hold with your face clear to be seen. I told you that. And make noise. We have been seen long since, and they will know who we are. But it is customary to show you are not trying to take the hold by surprise." He nodded, but held his tongue. Neither Ruark nor any of the three with him were making a sound, and neither was Avienda. Besides, the Jindo made enough clamor to be heard for miles. Cooladin's head swung toward him. Contempt flashed across that sun-dark face, and something else. Hate and disdain Rand had come to expect. But amusement? What did Cooladin find amusing?
"Fool Shido," Avienda muttered at his back.
Maybe she was right. Maybe the amusement was for her riding. But Rand did not think so. Matt galloped up, trailing a cloud of yellowish-brown dust, hat pulled low and spear resting upright on his stirrup iron like a lance. "What is this place, Rand?" he asked loudly, to be heard over the shouts. All those women would say was, "Move faster, move faster." Rand told him, and he frowned at the towering rock face of the butte. "You could hold that thing for years, I suppose, with supplies. But it isn't a patch on the stone, or the Torah Harad.
The Torah what? Rand said. Matt rolled his shoulders before answering.
Just something I heard of once.
He stood in his stirrups to peer back over the heads of the Jindo toward the peddler's train.
At least they're still with us. I wonder how long before they finish trading and go.
Not before Alker Dahl. Ruark says there's a sort of fair whenever clan chiefs meet, even if it's only two or three. With all 12 coming, I don't think Kadir and Kylie will want to miss it.
Matt did not look pleased at the news.
Ruark led the way straight to the widest fissure in the sheer stone wall, 10 or 12 paces across at the broadest, and shadowed by the height of its sheer sides, as it wove deeper and deeper, dark and even cool beneath a ribbon of sky. It felt odd to be in so much shade. The Aiel's wordless shouts swelled, magnified between the gray-brown walls. When they suddenly ceased, the silence, broken only by the clatter of mules' hooves and the creak of wagon wheels far behind, seemed very loud. They rounded another curve, and the fissure opened abruptly into a wide canyon, long and almost straight. From every side, shrill, ululating cries broke from hundreds of women's mouths. A thick crowd lined the way, women in bulky skirts, shawls wrapped about their heads, and men wearing grayish-brown coats and breeches, the cadensor, and maidens of the spear, too, waving their arms in welcome, beating on pots or whatever could make a noise. Rand gaped, and not just for the pandemonium. The canyon walls were green, in narrow terraces climbing halfway up both sides. Not all were really terraces, he realized. Small, flat-roofed houses of gray stone or yellow clay seemed to be stacked practically atop one another, in clusters with paths winding between, and every roof a garden of beans and squashes, peppers and melons, and plants he did not know. Chickens ran loose, redder than those he knew, and some strange sort of fowl, larger and speckled gray. Children, most garbed like their elders, and white-robed Gaishine moved among the rows with big clay pitchers, apparently watering individual plants. The Aiel did not have cities, he had always been told, but this was certainly a fair-sized town, at least, if as odd a one as he had ever seen. The din was too great for him to ask any of the questions that popped into his head, such as what were those rounded fruits, too red and shiny for apples, growing on low, pale-leaved bushes, or those straight, broad-leafed stalks lined with long, fat, yellow-tasseled sprouts. He had been too long a farmer not to wonder. Ruark and Hiren slowed, and so did Culloden, but only to a quick walk, thrusting their spears through the bowcase harnesses on their backs. Amice ran on ahead, laughing like a girl, while the men continued their steady advance along the crowd-lined canyon floor, the cries of the hold's women vibrating in the air and nearly overshadowing the clanging of pots. Rand followed, as Avienda had told him to. Matt looked as if he wanted to turn around and ride right back out again. At the far end of the canyon, the wall leaned inward, making a deep, dark pocket. The sun never reached to the back of it, so Avienda had said, and the rocks there, always cool, gave the hold its name. In front of the shadows, Amice stood with another woman atop a wide gray boulder, its top smoothed for a platform. The second woman, slender in her bulky skirts, scarf-bound yellow hair spilling below her waist and touched with white from her temples, appeared older than Amice, though certainly more than handsome, with a few fine wrinkles at the corners of her gray eyes. She was dressed the same as Amice, a plain brown shawl over her shoulders, her necklaces and bracelets of gold and carved ivory, no finer or richer. But this was Leon, the roof mistress of Cold Rock's hold. The wavering, high-pitched cries dwindled away to nothing as Ruark halted before the boulder, a step closer than Hiren and Culloden. "I ask leave to enter your hold, roof mistress," he announced in a loud, carrying tone.
"You have my leave, clan chief," the yellow-haired woman replied formally, and just as loudly. Smiling, she added in a much warmer voice, "Shade of my heart, you will always have my leave."
I give thanks, roof mistress of my heart.
That did not sound particularly formal either. Hyern stepped forward.
Roof mistress, I ask leave to come beneath your roof.
You have my leave, Hyern, Leon told the stocky man. Beneath my roof there is water and shade for you. The Jindo Sept is always welcome here.
I give thanks, roof mistress.
Hyern clapped Ruark on the shoulder and left to rejoin his people. Aiel's ceremony was short, it seemed, and to the point. Swaggering Kuladin joined Ruark.
I ask leave to enter your hold, roof mistress.
Leon blinked, frowning at him. A murmur rose behind Rand, an astonished buzz from hundreds of throats. A sudden feel of danger hung in the air. Matt certainly felt it too, fingering his spear and half-turning to see what the mass of Aiel was doing.
What is the matter? Rand asked quietly over his shoulder. Why doesn't she say something?
He asked as if he were a clan chief, Avienda whispered disbelievingly. The man is a fool. He must be mad.
If she refuses him, it will mean trouble with the Shido, and she may, for such an insult. Not blood feud. He is not their clan chief, however swollen his head, but trouble.
Between one breath and the next, her voice sharpened.
You did not listen, did you? You did not listen! She could have refused permission even to Ruark, and he would have had to leave. It would break the clan, but it is in her power.
She can refuse even he who comes with the dawn, Randall Thor. Women are not powerless among us. Not like your wetlander women, who must be queens or nobles, or else dance for a man if they wish to eat.
He shook his head slightly. Every time he was on the point of berating himself for how little he had learned about the Aiel, Avienda reminded him how little she knew about anyone not Aiel. Someday, I would like to introduce you to the women's circle in Emmons Field.
It will be interesting to hear you explain to them how powerless they are.
He felt her shifting against his back, trying to get a good look at his face, and carefully kept his expression smooth.
Maybe they'll explain a few things to you, too.
You have my leave, Leon began.
Kuladin smiled, swelling up where he stood.
To step beneath my roof. Water and shade will be found for you.
Soft gasps from hundreds of mouths made quite a loud sound. The fire-haired man quivered as if struck, face red with rage. He did not seem to know what to do. He took a challenging step forward, staring up at Leon and Amis, clutching his own forearms as though to keep his hands from his spears, then whirled and strode back toward the gathering, glaring this way and that, daring anyone to speak. Finally, he stopped not far from where he had begun, staring at Rand. Coals could not have been hotter than his blue eyes.
As one friendless and alone, Avienda whispered, she has welcomed him as a beggar. The gravest insult to him, and none to the Shido.
Suddenly, she fisted Rand so hard in the ribs that he grunted.
Move, wetlander! You hold such honor as I have left in your hands. All will know I have taught you. Move!
Swinging a leg over, he slid from Jiaden's back and strode up beside Ruark.
I am not Aiel, he thought. I do not understand them, and I cannot let myself come to like them too much. I cannot.
None of the other men had done so, but he bowed to Leon. That was how he had been brought up.
Roof mistress, I ask leave to come beneath your roof.
He heard Avienda's breath catch. He had been supposed to say the other thing, what Ruark had. The clan chief's eyes narrowed worriedly, watching his wife, and Kuladin's flushed face twisted in a scornful smile. The soft murmurs from the crowd sounded puzzled. The roof mistress stared at Rand even harder than she had at Kuladin, taking him in from hair to boots and back again, the shufa lying around the shoulders of a red coat that would surely never be worn by an Aiel. She looked questioningly at Amis, who nodded.
Such modesty, Leon said slowly, is becoming in a man. Men seldom know where to find it.
Spreading her dark skirts, she curtsied, awkwardly. It was not a thing Aiel women did, but still a curtsy in return of his bow.
The Kara Karn has leave to enter my hold. For the chief of chiefs, there is ever water and shade at Cold Rocks.
Another great ululation from the women in the crowd, but whether for him or for the ceremony, Rand did not know. Culloden paused to stare implacable hatred at him, then stalked off, brushing roughly past Avienda as she slid ungracefully from the dapple stallion. He melded quickly into the dispersing crowd. Matt slowed in the act of dismounting to stare after the man.
Watch your back with that one, Rand, he said quietly. I mean it.
Everybody tells me that, Rand said.
The peddlers were already setting up to trade in the center of the canyon, and at the entrance, Moraine and the rest of the Wise Ones' company were arriving to a few shouts and the drumming of pots, but nothing like the cries that had welcomed Ruark.
He isn't who I have to worry about. His dangers were not Aiel. Moraine to one side and Lanfear to the other. How could I have more danger than that? It was nearly enough to make him laugh.
Amis and Leon had climbed down, and to Rand's surprise, Ruark put an arm around each of them. They were both tall, as most Aiel women seem to be, but neither came higher than the clan chief's shoulder.
You have met my wife, Amis, he said to Rand.
Now you must meet my wife, Leon.
Rand realized his mouth was hanging open and closed it quickly. After Avienda had told him the roof mistress of Cold Rocks was Ruark's wife and named Leon, he was sure he had misunderstood back at Cheyendere all that shade of my heart between the man and Amis. He had had other things on his mind then anyway. But this...
Both of them?
Matt spluttered.
Light, too? Oh, burn me. He's the luckiest man in the world or the biggest fool since creation.
I had thought, Ruark said, frowning, that Avienda was teaching you our customs. She leaves out much, it appears.
Leaning to look around her husband, their husband, Leon raised an eyebrow at Amis, who said dryly,
She seemed ideal to tell him what he needs to know. Something to keep her from trying to run back to the maidens whenever our backs were turned, too. Now it seems I must have a long talk with her in a quiet place. No doubt she has been teaching him maiden hand talk, or how to milk a gara.
Flushing slightly, Avienda tossed her head irritably. Her dark reddish hair had grown over her ears, long enough to sway in a fringe below her headscarf.
There were more important matters to speak of than marriages. Anyway, the man does not listen.
She has been a good teacher, Rand put in quickly. I have learned a great deal about your customs and the threefold land from her.
Hand talk?
Any mistakes I make are mine, not hers.
How did you milk a venomous 2-foot lizard?
Why?
She has been a good teacher, and I'd like to keep her as such, if that is all right.
Why in the light did I say that? The woman could be pleasant enough sometimes, when she forgot herself anyway. The rest of the time she was a burr under his coat. Yet at least he knew who the Wise Ones had set to watch him, as long as she was there. Amis studied him, those clear blue eyes as sharp as an Aes Sedai's. But then she could channel. Her face merely looked younger than it should, not ageless, but maybe she was as much Aes Sedai as an Aes Sedai.
That sounds a fine arrangement to me, she said.
Avienda opened her mouth, all bristling indignation, and closed it again, sullenly, when the Wise One shifted that stare to her. Perhaps the woman had thought her time with him was done, now that they had reached Cold Rocks.
You must be tired after your journey, Leon said to Rand, her gray eyes motherly. And hungry as well. Come.
Her warm smile included Matt, who was hanging back and beginning to look to the peddler's wagons.
Come beneath my roof.
Fetching his saddlebags, Rand left Jiaden to the care of a Gaishine woman, who took Pips as well. Matt gave the wagons a final stare before tossing his saddlebags over his shoulder and following. Leon's roof, her house, sat on the highest level on the west side, with the steep canyon wall rising a good 100 paces above. Dwelling of the clan chief and roof mistress or no, from the outside it appeared to be a modest rectangle of large yellow clay bricks with narrow, glassless windows covered by plain white curtains, a vegetable garden on its flat roof, and another in front on a small terrace separated from the house by a narrow path paved with flat gray stones. Big enough for 2 rooms, maybe. Except perhaps for the square bronze gong hanging beside the door, it looked much like the other structures Rand could see, and from that vantage point, the entire length of the valley was laid out below him. A small, simple house. Inside, it was something else. The brick part was one large room, floored with reddish-brown tiles, but it was only part. Carved into the stone behind were more rooms, high-ceilinged and surprisingly cool, with wide arched doorways and silver lamps giving off a scent that hinted of green places. Rand saw only one chair, tall-backed and lacquered red and gold, with a look of not much use. The chief's chair, Avienda called it. There was little more wood to be seen, beyond a few polished or lacquered boxes and chests, and low reading stands holding open books. The reader would need to lie on the floor. Intricately woven carpets covered the floors, and bright rugs in layers. He recognized some patterns from Tyr and Kyrian and Andor, even Ilion and Taraban, while other designs were unfamiliar, broad, jagged stripes, and no 2 colors alike, or linked hollow squares in grays and browns and blacks. In sharp contrast to the harsh sameness outside this valley, there was vivid color everywhere. Wall hangings, he was sure, had come from the other side of the spine of the world. Perhaps in the same way wall hangings had left the Stone of Tyr. And cushions of all sizes and hues, often tasseled or fringed or both, in silk of red or gold. Here and there, in niches carved into the walls, stood a thin porcelain vase or a silver bowl or an ivory carving, often of some strange animal or other. So these were the caves the Tyran spoke of. It could have had the garishness of Tyr or the Tinkers, but instead it seemed dignified, formal and informal at the same time. With a small grin for Avienda to show her he had listened, Rand pulled a guest gift for Leon from his saddlebags, a finely worked golden lion. It had been looted from Tyr and bought from a Jindo water seeker. But if he was ruler of Tyr, maybe it was like stealing from himself. After a moment of hesitation, Matt produced a gift too, a Tyran necklace of silver flowers, no doubt from the same source originally, and no doubt intended for Ascendra. Exquisite, Leon smiled, holding up the lion. I have always had a taste for Tyran craftwork. Ruark brought me 2 pieces many years ago. In a voice suitable for a good wife, reminiscing over some particularly fine sugar berries, she said to her husband, You took them from the tent of a high lord just before Laemon was beheaded, did you not? A pity you did not reach Andor. I have always wanted a piece of Andorran silver. This necklace is beautiful too, Matt Cawthon. Listening to her heap praise on both gifts, Rand masked his shock. For all her skirts and motherly eyes, she was as Aiel as any maiden of the spear. By the time Leon finished, Moraine and the other wise ones arrived with Lan and Egwene. The warder's sword drew a single disapproving glance, but the roofmistress welcomed him warmly after Bear called him An Alain. Yet that was nothing to her greeting for Egwene and Moraine. You honor my roof, Aes Sedai. The roofmistress's tone made it sound an understatement. She came very close to bowing to them. It is said that we served Aes Sedai before the breaking of the world and failed them, and for that failure were sent here to the Threefold Land. Your presence says that perhaps our sin was not beyond forgiving. Of course. She had not been to Ruidian. Apparently the prohibition against speaking of what happened in Ruidian with anyone who had not been there applied even between husband and wife. and between sister wives, or whatever the relationship was between Amis and Leon. Moraine tried to give Leon a guest gift, too. Tiny crystal and silver flasks of scent all the way from Arad Doman. But Leon spread her hands. Your very presence is guest gift beyond value, Aes Sedai. To accept more would dishonor my roof and me. I could not bear the shame. She sounded entirely serious, and troubled that Moraine might press the scent on her. It was an indication of the relative importance of the Kara Karn and an Aes Sedai.
As you wish, Moraine said, returning the flasks to her belt pouch.
She was icily serene in blue silk, her pale cloak thrown back.
Your threefold land will surely see more Aes Sedai. We have never had reason to come before.
Amis did not look best pleased over that at all, and flame-haired Malayne stared at Moraine like a green-eyed cat, wondering if she should do something about a large dog that had wandered into her barnyard. Bear and Sienna exchanged troubled glances, but nothing like the two who could channel. A flurry of Gaishine, men and women alike graceful in cowled white robes, their downcast eyes seeming so strangely submissive in Aiel faces, took Moraine and Egwene's cloaks, brought damp towels for hands and faces and tiny silver cups of water to be drunk formally, and finally a meal served with silver bowls and trays fit for a palace, yet eaten from pottery with a blue-striped glaze. Everyone ate lying on the floor, where white tiles had been set into the stone for a table, heads together, cushions under their chests, radiating out like spokes in a wheel, while Gaishine slipped between to place dishes. Matt struggled, shifting this way and that on his cushions, but Lan lounged as if he had always eaten that way, and Moraine and Egwene looked almost as comfortable. No doubt they had had practice in the Wise One's tents. Rand found it awkward, yet the food itself was peculiar enough to take most of his attention. A dark, spicy stew of goat with chopped peppers was unfamiliar, but hardly strange, and peas were peas anywhere, or squash. The same could not be said of the crumbly, coarse yellow bread, or long, bright red beans mixed in with the green, or a dish of bright yellow kernels and bits of pulpy red that Avienda called zamai, or tamat, or a sweet bulbous fruit with a tough greenish skin she said came from one of those leafless, spiny plants called cardon. It was all tasty, though. He might have enjoyed the meal more if she had not lectured him on everything. Not sister wives, that was left to Amis and Leon, lying on either side of Ruark and smiling at each other almost as much as at their husband. If they had both married him so as not to break up their friendship, it was plain they both loved him. Rand could not see Elaine and Min agreeing to such an agreement. He wondered why he had even thought of it. The sun must have cooked his brains. But if Avienda left that one explanation to others, she explained everything else in tooth-grinding detail. Maybe she thought him an idiot for not knowing about sister wives. Turned on her right side to face him, she smiled almost sweetly as she told him the spoon could be used for eating the stew, or the zamai, and tamat. But her eyes shone with a light that said it was the wise ones being there that kept her from hurling a bowl of something at his head. I do not know what I've done to you, he said quietly. He was very conscious of Malayne on his other side, seeming engrossed in her own low conversation with Sienna. Bear put in a word now and then, but he thought she was bending an ear his way too. But if you hate being my teacher so much, you do not have to be. It just popped out. I'm sure Ruark or the Wise Ones will find someone else. The Wise Ones certainly would, if he rid himself of this spy. You have done nothing to me. She bared teeth at him. If it was meant to be a smile, it fell considerably short. And you never will. You may lie however is most comfortable for eating and talk to those around you. Except for those of us who must instruct instead of sharing the meal, of course. It is considered polite to talk with those on both sides. From behind her, Matt looked at Rand and rolled his eyes, clearly relieved to be spared that. Unless you are forced to face one in particular as to teach him. Take food with your right hand, unless you must lean on that elbow, and It was torture, and she seemed to enjoy it. The Aiel seemed to set great store by the giving of gifts. Maybe if he gave her a gift. All talk for a time when the meal is done, unless one of us must teach instead, and a bribe. It did not seem fair to have to bribe someone who was spying on him, but if she meant to go on even half like this, it would be worth it for a little peace. When the meal was cleared away by Gaishan, and silver cups of dark wine brought, Bear fixed Avienda with a grim eye across the white tiles, and she subsided sulkily. Egwene knelt up to reach over mat and patter, but it did not appear to help. At least she was quiet. Egwene gave him a tight look. Either she knew what he was thinking, or she considered Avienda's sulks his fault. Ruark dug out his short-stemmed pipe and tobacco pouch, thumbing the bowl full, then passing the leather pouch to Matt, who had produced his own silver-mounted pipe.
"Some have taken news of you to heart, Randalthor, and quickly, it seems. Leon tells me word has come that Geron, who is clan chief of the Sharad Aiel, and Bale of the Goshin have already reached Al-Kerdal. Irim of the Charin is on his way."
He allowed a slender young Gaishan woman to light his pipe with a burning twig. From the way she moved, with a different sort of grace than the other white-robed men and women, Rand suspected she had been a maiden of the spear not too long ago. He wondered how long she had to continue in her year and a day of service, meek and humble. Matt grinned at the woman as she knelt to light his pipe. The green-eyed stare she gave him from the depths of her cowl was not meek at all, and wiped the grin right off his face. Irritably, he rolled onto his belly, a thin blue streamer rising from his pipe. It was too bad he did not see the satisfaction on her face, or see it wiped away in a blush by one glance from Amis. The green-eyed young woman scurried away, looking shamed beyond belief. And Avienda, who so hated having to give up the spear, who still saw herself as spear sister to a maiden of whatever clan? She frowned at the departing Gaishan, as Mistress Alvir would have glared at someone who had spit on the floor. A strange people. Egwene was the only one Rand saw with any sympathy in her eyes at all. "The Goshin and the Sharad," he muttered at his wine. Ruark had told him each clan chief would bring a few warriors to the Golden Bull, for honor, and each sept chief as well. Added together, it meant perhaps 1,000 from each clan. 12 clans, 12,000 men and maidens eventually, all tied up in their strange honor and ready to dance the spears if a cat sneezed. Maybe more because of the fair. He looked up. "They have a feud, don't they?" Ruark and Lan both nodded. "I know you said that something like the Peace of Roydion holds at Al-Kerdal, Ruark, but I saw how far that peace held Culloden and the Shido. Maybe I had better go right away. If the Goshin and the Sharad start fighting, a thing like that could spread. I want all the Aiel behind me, Ruark."
"The Goshin are not Shido," Malayne said sharply, shaking her red-gold mane like a lioness.
"Nor are the Sharad."
Bane's reedy voice was thinner than that of the younger woman, but no less definite.
"Geron and Bale may try to kill one another before they return to their holds, but not at Al-Kerdal."
"None of which answers Randalthor's question," Ruark said. "If you go to Al-Kerdal, before all of the chiefs arrive, those who have not come yet will lose honor. It is not a good way to announce that you are Karakhan, dishonoring men you will call to follow you. The Nakai have furthest to come. A month, and all will be at Al-Kerdal."
"Less," Sianna said, with a brisk shake of her head. "I have walked Alcera's dreams twice, and she says Bruan means to run all the way from Shiagihold. Less than a month."
"A month before you leave, to be sure," Ruark told Rand. "Then 3 days to Al-Kerdal, perhaps 4. All will be there then."
A month. He rubbed his chin. Too long. Too long and no choice.
In stories, things always happened as the hero planned, seemingly when he wanted them to happen. In real life, it rarely occurred that way, even for a Taviran with prophecy supposedly working for him. In real life, it was scratch and hope, and luck if you found more than half a loaf where you needed a whole. Yet a part of his plan was following the path he had hoped for. The most dangerous part. Moraine, stretched out between Lan and Amis, sipped her wine lazily, eyes lidded as if sleepy. He did not believe it. She saw everything, heard everything. But he had nothing to say now that she should not hear. How many will resist, Ruark, or oppose me? You have hinted, but you've never said for sure.
I cannot be sure in it, the clan chief replied around his pipe stem. When you show the dragons, they will know you. There is no way to imitate the dragons of Roydion.
Had Moraine's eyes flickered?
You are the one prophesied. I will support you, and Bruan certainly, and Yerek of the Rain Aiel. The others? Savanna, Soladric's wife, will bring the Shido since the clan has no chief. She is young to be roof mistress of a hold. Doubtless displeased, she will have only one roof, and not an entire hold when someone is chosen to replace Soladric. And Savanna is as wily and untrustworthy as any Shido ever born. But even if she makes no trouble, you know that Culloden will. He acts the clan chief, and some Shido may follow him without his entering Roydian. Shido are fools enough for that. Han of the Tomanel may move in any direction. He is a prickly man, hard to know and difficult to deal with, and...
He cut off as Leon murmured softly, Is there any other kind? Rand did not think the clan chief had been meant to hear. Amis hid a smile behind her hand. Her sister wife buried her face innocently in her wine cup.
As I was saying, Ruark said, frowning resignedly from one of his wives to the other, it is not a thing I can be sure of. Most will follow you, perhaps all, perhaps even the Shido. We have waited 3,000 years for the man who bears two dragons. When you show your arms, none will doubt you are the one sent to unite us.
And break them. But he did not mention that.
The question is how they will decide to react.
He tapped his teeth with his pipe stem for a moment.
You will not change your mind and don the Cadensor?
And show them what, Ruark? A pretend Aiel? As well dress Matt for Aiel. Matt choked on his pipe.
I will not pretend. I am what I am. They must take me as I am.
Rand raised his fists, coat sleeves falling enough to uncover the golden-maned heads on the backs of his wrists.
These prove me. If they aren't enough, then nothing is.
Where do you mean to lead the spears to war once more? Moraine asked suddenly, and Matt choked again, snatching the pipe out of his mouth and staring at her. Her dark eyes were not lidded any longer. Rand's fists tightened convulsively till his knuckles cracked. Trying to be clever with her was dangerous. He should have learned that long since. She remembered every word that she heard, filed it away, sorted and examined it until she knew just what it meant. He got to his feet slowly. They were all watching him. Egwene frowned even more wordly than Matt, but the Aiel just watched. Talk of war did not upset them. Ruark looked. Ready. And Moraine's face was all frozen calm. If you will excuse me, he said, I'm going to walk around a while. Avienda rose to her knees, and Egwene stood, but neither followed him.